People who wear glasses, without them they always look defocused, vulnerable, out in the open, a layer removed. He looked like a tired old man. One leg was thrust forward. I could see the patterned sole of his shoe. What did he call a threat? Some kind of exposure or embarrassment? Something that might blow away the perfect life he'd described on Beckman Drive? Maybe it was his wife who was involved in something. Maybe he was covering for her. Maybe she'd been having an affair with the tall, dead guy. Maybe lots of things. Maybe anything. Maybe his family was threatened by disgrace, bankruptcy, stigma, cancellation of country club membership. I went around in circles. I didn't live in Hubble's world. I didn't share his frame of reference. I had seen him trembling and shaking with fear, but I had no idea how much it took to make a guy like that afraid, or how little. When I first saw him at the station house yesterday, he had looked upset and agitated. Since then, he had been from time to time trembling, paralyzed, staring with fear, sometimes resigned and apathetic, clearly very afraid of something. I leaned on the cell wall and waited for him to tell me what. "They're threatening us," he said again. "If I ever tell anybody what's going on, they said they'll break into our house, round us all up, in my bedroom. They said they'll nail me to the wall and cut my balls off. Then they'll make my wife eat them. Then they'll cut our throats. They said they'll make our children watch. And then they'll do things to them after we're dead that we'll never know about." Chapter 7. "So what should I do?" Hubble asked me. "What would you do?" He was staring over at me, waiting for a reply. What would I do? If somebody threatened me like that, they would die. I'd rip them apart, either as they spoke, or days, or months, or years later. I would hunt them down and rip them apart. But Hubble couldn't do that. He had a family. 3 hostages waiting to be taken. 3 hostages already taken. Taken as soon as the threat was made. "What should I do?" he asked me again. I felt pressure. I had to say something, and my forehead hurt. It was bruising up after the massive impact with the red boy's face. I stepped to the bars and glanced down the row of cells, leaned against the end of the bunk, thought for a moment, came up with the only possible answer, but not the answer Hubble wanted to hear. "Nothing you can do," I said. "You've been told to keep your mouth shut, so you keep it shut. Don't tell anybody what's going on. Ever." He looked down at his feet, dropped his head into his hands, gave a moan of abject misery, like he was crushed with disappointment. "I've got to talk to somebody," he said. "I've got to get out of this. I mean it. I've got to get out. I've got to talk to somebody." I shook my head at him. "You can't do that," I said. "They've told you to say nothing, so you say nothing. That way you stay alive, you and your family." He looked up, shuddered. "Something very big is going on," he said. "I've got to stop it if I can." I shook my head again. If something very big was going on around people who use threats like that, then he was never going to stop it. He was on board, and he was going to stay on board. I smiled a bleak smile at him and shook my head for the 3rd time. He nodded like he understood, like he finally accepted the situation. He went back to rocking and staring at the wall. His eyes were open, red and naked without the gold rims. He sat silently for a long time. I couldn't understand the confession. He should have kept his mouth shut. He should have denied any involvement with the dead guy. Should have said he had no idea why his phone number was written down in the guy's shoe. Should have said he had no idea what Pluribus was. Then he could have just gone home. "Hubble," I said, "why did you confess?" He looked up, waited a long moment before replying. "I can't answer that," he said. "I'd be telling you more than I should." "I already know more than I should," I said. "If Finley asked about the dead guy and Pluribus, and you flipped. So I know there's a link between you and the dead guy and whatever Pluribus is. He gazed at me, looking vague. Is Finley that black detective? He said. Yes, I said. Finley, chief of detectives. He's new, Hubble said. Never seen him before. It was always gray. He was there years, since I was a kid. There's only one detective, you know. Don't know why there's a chief of detectives when there's only one. There's only 8 people in the whole police department. Chief Morrison, he's been there years. Then the desk man, 4 uniformed men, a woman, and the detective, Gray. Only now it's Finley, the new man. Black guy, the first we've ever had. Gray killed himself, you know. Hung himself from a rafter in his garage. February, I think. I let him ramble on. Prison conversation. It passes the time. That's what it's for. Hubble was good at it. But I still wanted him to answer my question. My forehead hurt, and I wanted to bathe it with cold water. I wanted to walk around for a while. I wanted to eat. I wanted coffee. I waited without listening as Hubble rambled through the municipal history of Margrave. Suddenly he stopped.
What were you asking me?
He said. Why did you confess to killing the guy? I repeated. He looked around, then he looked straight at me.
There's a link, he said. That's all it's safe to say right now.
The detective mentioned the guy and used the word Pluribus, which made me jump. I was startled. I couldn't believe he knew the connection. Then I realized he hadn't known there was a connection, but I'd just told him by being startled. You see, I'd given it away. I felt I'd blown it, given away the secret, and I mustn't do that because of the threat. He tailed off and went quiet. An echo of the fright and panic he had felt in Finley's office was back. He looked up again, took a deep breath.
I was terrified, he said.
But then the detective told me the guy was dead. He'd been shot. I got scared because if they had killed him, they might kill me too. I can't really tell you why, but there's a link, like you worked out. If they got that particular guy, does that mean they are going to get me, too? Or doesn't it? I had to think it out. I didn't even know for sure who had killed the guy. But then the detective told me about the violence.
Did he tell you about that?
I nodded. The injuries? I said. Sounded pretty unpleasant.
Right, Hubble said. And it proves it was who I thought it was. So I was really scared.
I was thinking, are they looking for me, too?
Or aren't they?
I just didn't know. I was terrified. I thought for ages it was going around and around in my head. The detective was going crazy. I didn't say anything because I was thinking. Seemed like hours. I was terrified, you know?
He fell back into silence. He was running it through his head again, probably for the 1,000th time, trying to figure out if his decision had been the right one.
I suddenly figured out what to do, he said.
I had 3 problems. If they were after me, too, I had to avoid them. Hide, you know, to protect myself. But if they weren't after me, then I had to stay silent, right? To protect my wife and kids. And from their point of view, that particular guy needed shooting. 3 problems. So I confessed.
I didn't follow his reasoning. Didn't make much sense the way he was explaining it to me. I looked blankly at him.
3 separate problems, right? He said.
I decided to get arrested. Then I was safe if they were after me, because they can't get at me in here, right? They're out there and I'm in here. That's problem number 1 solved. But I also figured, this is the complicated bit, if they actually were not after me at all, then why don't I get arrested but don't say anything about them? They would think I had got arrested by mistake or whatever, and they see that I'm not talking. They see
okay? It proves I'm safe. It's like a demonstration that I'm dependable, a sort of proof, trial by ordeal sort of thing. That's problem number two, solved. And by saying it was me actually killed the guy, it sort of definitely puts me on their side. It's like a statement of loyalty, right? And I thought they might be grateful I had pointed the heat in the wrong direction for a while. So that was problem number three, solved.
I stared at him. No wonder he had clammed up and thought like crazy for 40 minutes when he was in with Finley. Three birds with one stone. That's what he had been aiming for. The part about proving he could be trusted not to spill his guts was okay. Whoever they were, they would notice that. A spell in jail without talking was a rite of passage. A badge of honor counted for a lot. Good thinking, Hubble. Unfortunately, the other part was pretty shaky. They couldn't get to him in here. He had to be joking. No better place in the world to ace a guy than prison. You know where he is, you got all the time you need. Lots of people who will do it for you. Lots of opportunity. Cheap, too. On the street, a hit would cost you, what, $1,000? $2,000? Plus a risk. Inside, it costs you a carton of cigarettes. Plus no risk, because nobody would notice. No, prison was not a safe hiding place. Bad thinking, Hubble. And there was another flaw, too. What are you going to do on Monday? I asked him. You'll be back home doing whatever you do. You'll be walking around Margrave or Atlanta or wherever it is you walk around. If they're after you, won't they get you then? He started up with the thinking again, going at it like crazy. He hadn't thought very far ahead before. Yesterday afternoon it had been blind panic, deal with the present. Not a bad principle, except pretty soon the future rolls in, and that needs dealing with too.
I'm just hoping for the best, Hubble said. I sort of felt if they wanted to get me, they might cool off after a while. I'm very useful to them. I hope they'll think about that. Right now, it's a very tense situation. But it's all going to calm back down very soon. I might just make it through. If they get me, they get me. I don't care anymore. It's my family I'm worried about.
He stopped and shrugged, blew a sigh. Not a bad guy. He hadn't set out to be some big criminal. It had crept up on the blind side, sucked him in so gently he hadn't noticed, until he wanted out. If he was very lucky, they wouldn't break all his bones until after he was dead. How much does your wife know? I asked him. He glanced over, an expression of horror on his face.
Nothing, he said.
Nothing at all. I haven't told her anything. Not a thing. I couldn't. It's all my secret. Nobody else knows a thing.
You'll have to tell her something, I said. She's sure to have noticed you're not at home, vacuuming the pool or whatever you do on the weekend.
I was just trying to lighten it up, but it didn't work out. Hubble went quiet, misting over again at the thought of his backyard in the early fall sunlight, his wife maybe fussing over rose bushes or whatever, his kids darting about shrieking. Maybe they had a dog, and a three-car garage with European sedans waiting to be hosed off. A basketball hoop over the middle door waiting for the 9-year-old to grow strong enough to dunk the heavy ball. A flag over the porch, early leaves waiting to be swept, family life on a Saturday. But not this Saturday. Not for this guy.
Maybe she'll think it's all a mistake, he said.
Maybe they've told her. I don't know. We know one of the policemen, Dwight Stevenson. My brother married his wife's sister. I don't know what he'll have said to her. I guess I'll deal with that on Monday. I'll say it was some kind of terrible mistake. She'll believe it. Everybody knows mistakes are made. He was thinking out loud. Hubble, I said, what did the tall guy do to them that was liable to get himself shot in the head? He stood up and leaned on the wall. Rested his foot on the edge of the steel toilet pan, looked at me, wouldn't answer. Now for the big question.
What about you? I asked him. What have you done to them liable to get yourself shot in the head?
He wouldn't answer. The silence in our cell was terrible. I let it crash around for a while. Couldn't think of anything more to say.
Hubble clunked his shoe against the metal toilet pan. A rattly little rhythm. Sounded like a Bo Diddley riff.
"You ever heard of Blind Blake?" I asked him.
He stopped clunking and looked up.
"Who?"
he said blankly.
"Doesn't matter," I said. "I'm going to find a bathroom. I need to put a wet towel on my head. It hurts."
"I'm not surprised," he said.
I'll come with you."
He was anxious not to be left alone.
Understandable.
I was going to be his minder for the weekend. Not that I had any other plans.
We walked down the cell row to a kind of open area at the end. I saw the fire door Spivey had used the night before. Beyond it was a tiled opening. Over the opening was a clock. Nearly 12 noon. Clocks in prisons are bizarre. Why measure hours and minutes when people think in years and decades?